Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Pro Wrestling Show in association with Talk Sport. We'll be recording a proper full show later this week, reviewing all the week's action from the world of Graps. But coming up on today's show, we went off to the NXT UK tapings in Coventry this past weekend and we sat down for 40 minutes with Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster. The Welsh duo who are tearing it up as a tag team have been tearing it up in singles in the independent scene for an incredibly long time. So here is our conversation with those guys in full for you on the Pro Wrestling Show. You're listening to the Pro Wrestling Show. Just before we get to Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster, as always, head to TalkSport.com/WWE for all the latest wrestling news. We will have a big podcast later this week, so you can subscribe or you can follow us at Pro Wrestle Show on Instagram and Twitter. Do give us those likes, those subscriptions and those ratings as well, because it does make a big difference between us getting noticed and not noticed by the great and the good, and getting our ratings up there and getting more of our more listeners for the podcast. So we really appreciate anything you can do to help. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. A really fun conversation today with Mark Andrews and with Flash Morgan Webster. Know before you listen and hear, I haven't spoken to them since Wales tonked England at the Principality, and I have no intention of doing so until that is wiped from the memory. So here's our conversation with Flash Morgan Webster and Mark Andrews. Oh, and just very quickly, the first minute or so of this is going to sound really naff because I didn't have one of the mics working. Fixed it after about a minute, and so you'll hear the audio change. So yeah, if you could just ride out that first 50 seconds or so, it goes to beautiful HD just after that. Well, delighted to be joined on the show now, and unlike when John's here and he pretends to be Welsh, he's from Hereford and pretends he's Welsh and supports the Welsh rugby team and the football team, and it's actually got a little bit Welsh in here. So delighted to say that we've got Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster joining us. How are we doing, boys?
Yeah, good. Yeah, thanks for having us. Thank you for having us.
Are you, and firstly, we're speaking on a day where, and people aren't going to hear this till after they know the result, but it is a rather big rugby match tonight. And are you guys going to get a chance to watch it while you're at the while you're getting ready for the show tonight?
We hope so. Yeah, with the internet being as good as it is nowadays, hopefully we can put a stream in the back, and we've got a roster that's very English. We've got a few of the Welsh lads as well, so it could get
quite rowdy backstage.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting dynamic backstage, I think. Hopefully we can stream the game anyway.
Well, there's not the positive view we've heard of Coventry, although you guys, like we were saying just before, you cut your teeth here. You've got some pretty positive memories of Coventry.
Yeah, I think back in the day we came up here quite a lot, and a lot of our first shows were up in Coventry, a place called Willenhall, and Jolly Beggar, which is literally a pub across the road from the Coventry Sky Dome. So it's quite a nice little kind of, we can look back and go, hey, that's the venue we used to wrestle at tons, and now we're in the big one over the road. So it's quite a nice weekend to be, celebrating, actually.
Yeah, it was my first booking outside of Wales was in Coventry, and as Mark said, it was only a small club, but they had the likes of Finn Balor wrestled there, Daniel Bryan wrestled there, and we just remember just hearing about this small little club in Coventry that was bringing all these indie stars, and we just thought, right, we need to be a part of this, and it was a big development in us becoming the stars that we are today.
Yeah, Coventry has quite the history, I guess.
It's quite a history for something, so it's good that it's pro wrestling. I'm really intrigued over the last kind of 6-7 weeks or so since we were down in the Performance Centre, how that has changed what you guys have been doing over recent times. Have you guys been based down in London with the Performance Centre? How has that facility
changed what you guys have been doing over the last couple of months?
We haven't been based there, but we've been lots of traveling back and forth, lots of training, and it really, really does. It will help our careers, really. It's crazy. You join a company like the WWE, and suddenly your eyes almost get open to all the things that you didn't know before. You know, it's a huge learning curve for everyone on the roster and everyone who's at the PC. It's just all the equipment they have there alone is something that I would have only dreamed of when I started wrestling when I was, you know, 12, 13. Yeah. I mean, when I first went to my training, the first training session I went to was like, you know, a few blue mats on the floor, and then you walk into this place and it's two massive rings, it's incredible gym equipment, you know, you've got a training coach there. It just, it really is kind of what dreams are made of if you want to be a professional wrestler. It's outstanding, that place is.
Yeah, totally. And on top of that, as Mark said, we've got the trainers. So we've got like Robbie Brookside and we've got John Moss, who are fantastic British wrestlers. And that's what we want. We want us to have this heritage of British wrestling within NXT UK. And on top of that as well, we do have Sean Hayes, which is one of the best strength and conditioning coaches in the world. So everyone's getting in better and better shape every time we're there, both in the ring and out of the ring.
It's crazy to think about the fact that you guys are only kind of in your mid-late 20s, and yet, comparatively, you just said about like wrestling since you were 12, 13 years old. You're like stalwarts of the UK scene at this point. Like,
yeah,
you have those memories of coming and wrestling in a pub in Coventry and like you're saying, in Wales. So, like, it's got to be such a... I don't know how you see the scene right now compared with what it was 15 years ago. It's got to be...
Oh, it's leaps and bounds. It's nice that we were in somewhat a part of it growing as well. You know, it's we've got to see it go from, you know, if you sold out a show to 100 people back in the day, that was a very impressive feat. Yeah. These days, you know, you have monthly shows up and down the country like Progress and ICW selling out to 800 to 1,000, and that's normal. I don't know how I would have dealt with the pressure back in the day if my first match was in front of 800 people. So in a way, I'm kind of glad that we got to grow as the industry did. But it's funny you mentioning that we're still relatively young, because I've always thought of myself as the young guy backstage, and that now you have talent coming in like Rhea Ripley or Tyler Bate or, you know,
Zaya Brookside,
and I think, whoa, like, I'm only 27 and I feel like the old guy backstage. Because
if you started going on with your back in the day stories already, like, well, it wasn't like this in my day, I'll tell you.
Genuinely, you know, because these guys, the one thing about the UK scene is that there's so much young talent, and not only is that impressive from the standpoint of, okay, there's lots of talent in the UK, but equally think about the years that they have ahead of them, and ourselves included, hopefully, you know. But guys like Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne and Zaya Brookside and Rhea Ripley and all those guys who are still in their early 20s, they've got years and years and years ahead of them to continue their careers. Like, this is literally only the start, and that is a kind of, well, it's a really nice and exciting thought, isn't it?
Well, we were saying recently that some of the new trainees coming through and stuff like that throughout the scene, that we spent years getting it wrong and being in front of nobody and kind of like trial and error. And it's quite nice now that the scene is so good that they're able to get on these big shows. On top of it, that there's now people, because we didn't have it, kind of a lot of the generation before us kind of left and they went off, that we didn't have anyone guiding the way. But now myself, Mark Andrews, the Wild Boar, Mike Hitchman in Wales can be like, well, okay, we tried this, it didn't exactly work, maybe try it this way. So they're kind of able to cut out those bits where we got stuff wrong, and they're able to kind of get a head start and get on the right track.
It's obviously really cool that you guys are getting to work together with the stuff you're doing at NXT UK, considering, you know, you came through, you mentioned Progress, but like Attack and the stuff coming out of Wales as well. What's your first kind of memory of each other when you first kind of found each other and before you either got in a ring together with a tag or against each other? What's that kind of, what do you remember of each other?
As I remember, we were training at a place called NWA Wales. That's where we both started out. And I'd been wrestling for maybe about 6 months. And Wild Boar, Mike Hitchman, and Flash Morgan Webster show up with some of their friends. And I was instantly annoyed and jealous because they showed up and they were doing all these crazy, impressive moves. And I was like, how are these guys doing this on their first day? And I'd already been training for like 6 months. And I thought I was like the best trainee there, you know. And I was like, who are these cool guys? Little did I know they'd been like practicing in their back garden doing all these cool moves and stuff. And I was like, it was awesome. So yeah, you kind of pushed me out of my comfort zone to get, you know, to get better, actually. So it's a good thing that you guys did show up to training.
well, on the flip side as well, as Mark said, the scene back then was very, very different. There wasn't a lot of stuff happening, and even some of the guys, and no discredit to them, but even some of the guys on the Welsh scene who were seen as quite prominent and quite quite good, the standards weren't that great. So when we first came in, we kind of went to training a little bit myself, Wellbo, and a lot of time we would go back to kind of doing backyard and stuff. And I remember we saw Mark, and Mark was really, really good in training. But instead of it being Mark going, "Oh, you guys need to get on shows," it was more us lot going, "Come to the backyard, come with us, come with us." Of course, he said no, and credit to him. And those years then where we were kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out, and we didn't commit to pro wrestling, Mark was there forging the way and keeping the Welsh scene alive. So when we did have enough and we thought, okay, we are going to commit to pro wrestling, we came in and Mark had already kind of started building up this scene and this reputation. So it was so much easier for me and Mike then when we needed to branch out. And I guess as well, you were probably happy to have two other people travelling from Wales with you.
Definitely. And you got to think as well, this is back when we were between 15 to 18 years old. So yeah, even back then, you know, we say it as if it was like, oh, 1 foot in, 1 foot out. But at 16, 17 years old, it's a completely understandable thing to be doing, really, isn't it? You know?
You're real passionate about it. So that's
exactly, exactly. You know?
I mean, you said it there, but you were, it felt like kind of it all in from the start. Was there ever, like, flash for you, something, a point where there was another option to wrestling, where you did think you were going to be doing something else? Or, you know, once you got to that age where you needed to make a decision on your life, you went, right, this is it, I'm all in.
I come from a small little Welsh town from the same street as, from the same town as Adrian Street. And I come from a very, if I'm honest, a very poor working class background. So the only way to get out of that really was university. So the likes of Wellbo, Mike Hitchman, he'll say this, he had the luxury of kind of being able to go and wrestle straight away, whereas I didn't have the money or the means to do that. So the only way for me to get out of that town was to go to university. So I went and got myself an art degree, art and psychology degree, and then I went on to get a teaching degree. And the scene was ticking on. It was getting better and getting better, but still, maybe even 5-6 years ago, it wasn't what it is now. We didn't think that we'd be able to make a living on the indies, let alone with the WWE. So I went and got myself a teaching degree, and then I think it was 2017 I got offered a full-time position at a school that I loved, and then the indies really started ramping up. So I had this decision of taking this job or going full leg with the indies, and I decided, thanks to the girlfriend who said, "Which one will you regret more?" And I said, "I regret not going 2 feet in with the indies," and I did that in 2017, and I've been full time ever since.
It does feel like there's always somebody behind you, doesn't it? There's always someone behind that story who gave you that little extra push, who said, no, you've got to go and do this, because like you say, it was starting to explode at that point, starting to grow, but not compared with what it is now. And I wonder, I joked about you guys being like the elder statesman, but is there like a story you tell? If the young guys or the young girls want to know about like what it was like back in the day, are you like, yeah, well, you turn up at all these schools, they've got professional rings, well, when I was coming through, ...
Yeah, I'll be honest, I very quickly jump on the kind of grizzled vet whenever I'm taking training classes. I don't mean to. It's just, I mean, I guess there's no like, you know, first story that pops in my head. But as I said, when I first started training, it was once a month at the local community center, and there were just some blue training mats on the floor, and that was it. And then my dad, who was incredibly supportive, as you said a minute ago, you know, you always need a good support system around you, especially if you're doing something like pro wrestling. And for me, luckily, my parents were really supportive, and especially my dad. He used to drive me like 5 or 6 hours from Cardiff up to Kent to go on like week training camps up in the, we sit in this like grotty little like bed and breakfast hotel. Like, in retrospect, my parents like were like, "Hey, he's 15 years old, let's let him go up there," and like it probably looks doubtful looking back. But like, I remember, you know, that's where I'd have to go and train, because you could only train once a month in Wales. So it was like, I have to travel 5 hours to have a week training camp, whereas these days, obviously, every city has a pretty decent training academy. You can probably find somewhere within an hour traveling, which has got a reputable kind of trainer and stuff like that, whereas back in the day, you'd have to drive, you know, miles to go and find a good training school. So that's kind of the thing that I always drive home, is just how much the scene has grown.
And you actually took the leap to go out to the States, you and Pete Dunne, and just kind of threw caution to the wind and actually went, "We're going to give this a go."
Yeah. Well, I think that mainly came from our, like, kind of like the punk rock mindset, the DIY mindset of like, just go and do it yourself. And, you know, we always wanted wrestling to us to kind of be like what a tour life would be for a punk rock band, you know? So we were like, let's fly ourselves out. Let's just book a hotel for like 2 nights. And after that, let's just see what happens. Which again, in retrospect, seems quite doubtful. I made some risky decisions here. But yeah, but and it ended up being great. We met loads of friends. You know, we were just sleeping on floors up and down, well, across America. I think we ended up wrestling in 10 states over the space of about 10 weeks and like about 20 matches just across the place. It was honestly the best experience of my life. And like, I think Pete would say the same. It really, that was something which I definitely don't regret in any way. And it was made so many friends to the stage where then when I moved out to America, maybe 2 years later for a brief like a short period I could move in with one of my friends, you know. So in the grand scheme of a life decision, it was incredibly positive, even if we were wrestling in front of crowds of 10 people most nights, you know. And that's kind of the charm of it as well, isn't it? You know, 50 fans or 50,000, it's nice to just give it your all regardless of what show you're on, because that's what, for, to me, that's what it's about, you know what I mean? It's about loving what we do and doing it to entertain anyone and everyone.
And then you mentioned kind of that you went out and lived there for a brief period of time. You got the TNA Impact stuff. Did you think you'd made it at that point? Were you just like, that's it, I'm on TV now. It's it. I'm on the rocket ship, I'm on the way.
Oh, I definitely had. In my head, I mean, I felt like I'd made it after I debuted my first match. I was like, it's happened. I've already achieved more than I ever thought I would. You know, because you got to remember, like, back when it was, so I started training in 2006. So back then, the thought of like a 5'7" skinny Welsh boy going to the WWE, that was completely off the cards. So when I debuted my first match, I was like, well, I've made it, you know, that's it. And then when I did my first overseas show, I was like, oh, I've definitely made it now. And then when I joined TNA, I was like, well, this is definitely it. And now I'm here and I'm like, whoa, like I had low expectations for myself, considering I should have shot higher, you know.
Well, I love that when you talk about the TNA stuff, you went and did TNA and we had like a goodbye show and we were like, yep, that's it, we're never seeing him again, he's gone. And then like 2 months later, we're like, oh, hey Mark.
I moved back, Mark. Like, yeah, turns out I can still live here.
I mean, it's got to be quite weird for you, Flash, because you saw these guys coming through, they had those opportunities, but then the first UK tournament came around and you're not involved in that. How much of a push was that to you to say, right, there is something big starting to happen here and I need to make sure that come next year, I'm in that tournament, I'm involved, I'm getting signed?
It was super motivated. I wrestled in the Cruiserweight Classic qualifier with Zack Sabre Jr. in April 2016, my date, yeah, 2016. And unfortunately, I dislocated my shoulder and got a torn labrum, had to have surgery on that. So I wasn't medically cleared for the first tournament, which of course was heartbreaking. But knowing how wrestling works, there's no guarantees that I would have been in that tournament. So it was good to kind of have that maybe that little excuse to say, like, hey, maybe I would have been in there, but the shoulder is why I'm not. So that was, because maybe if I was cleared and I hadn't gone in there, maybe that would have been a big blow to me. But it was so cool to kind of see the people I'd grown up with, like the Pete Dunnes, the Tyler Bates, the Mark Andrews, kind of get that chance. And not only get that chance, but when I went, I was there for night two, watched them absolutely kill it. Like, he'll tell you, I came to see you guys at the hotel afterwards, and I was like almost crying, because it was so cool to see my friends kind of that I'd known for ages that were awesome, for them to kill it. And we've been saying for ages, we've been saying for years that Pete Dunne's one of the best in the world.
Yeah,
we have.
Yeah, we've known him for a while.
And that weekend, the whole world knew about it. And we were just like, oh, we were right. See, he is the best.
Now everyone knows.
It's a different time though, compared with when you guys were first coming in and you could, you know, you had to get out there in front of 50 people, 70 people, whatever it was, night in, night out, and kind of prove yourself to those crowds. It feels like nowadays, not only have you got stuff like the WWE UK, the Performance Center, but actually with social media, with the internet, like, guys can get over ridiculously quickly because it's just so easy to access the stuff that they're doing. And you almost feel like maybe people need to cut their chops a bit more. Maybe people need to get out there and be wrestling more and getting out there a bit more before they get those chances.
Oh, 100%. I mean, going back to actually quote my dad again. He said to me, because obviously he's known Pete for years, he's known all you guys, you know, because from staying around my house and stuff like that over the years. And he said, he was like, oh, you know, the way to define Pete is it's 10 years of hard work to become an overnight success. And it's so true, because like, he literally became an overnight success on that weekend, you know, from those 2 days on that tournament. Everyone was talking, and I know obviously same with Tyler Bate, but obviously Tyler won the tournament, but to not win the tournament and to get the kind of well, the attention that Pete did from that weekend just goes to show. But it didn't happen overnight. You know, it happened from 10 years of wrestling in front of 10 people, of going and training in Japan, of traveling America, of really, really, you know, kind of hustling to get to that position. And I do think, as you said, you know, with social media these days, we live in that instant gratification generation, don't we? Where everybody kind of wants the likes and the kind of, they want to become overnight successes, but maybe they haven't done the 10 years of hard work. So I think it works both ways. I think with the scene being so hot at the moment, in some ways it can be detrimental to some talent, because maybe they get exposed to the world too fast.
Yeah.
You know, and we always, yeah, you know, we were always like pulling our hair out being like, oh, when's Pete going to get noticed? When's Pete going to get noticed? Like, he's not getting the opportunities. But like, in retrospect, it's very good that he didn't get exposed too soon, because obviously it happened at the right time and look where he's at now, you know?
Yeah, there's... like you say, there's so many eyes on people now that we fell so many times, and we got stuff wrong so many times, that in a way it was good that the scene hadn't exploded, because
nobody was there to see it.
So when the scene started coming up, people were going, who's this Mark Andrews? Who's this Flash Morgan Webster? And it's like, well, like, oh, they're good. Where've they come from? It's like, well, again, 10 years of, or 8 years or 5 years of working hard and having other people kind of guide the way and falling down and getting back up. So I'm kind of glad that we were that last, not saying I'm glad that we were that last generation, but I'm glad that we definitely had that opportunity to do that. I don't envy the people coming through now that have the eyes on them straight away, but then at the same time, they do have more opportunity and they do have better facilities. So I guess if you weigh it up, it probably works itself out just right. But I love the way that we did it, and I'm very grateful.
Yeah.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I think you do talk about the way that you guys did it and the way that you came up, and that's obviously a great way to hone your ring craft. But what's different, I feel, with the indie scene nowadays, and you've seen it more so, I mean, based in London, progress is the time we see you guys the most. The kind of longer term storytelling you guys get to tell, like all your stuff with Mark Haskins and those guys. And I think about like the night you won the Thunder Bastard, but in the same match we got the you and Eddie story, kind of getting that big push, which ended at Wembley. And actually that long term storytelling, that must be a whole other facet that wasn't there 10 years ago, 8 years ago.
It definitely is. And it's another thing as well that you see so many newer people come in and they get these opportunities, and they might know how to do some cool stuff, but they don't know who they are as a wrestler yet. So sometimes they can get put on a progress and they don't do as well as people expect, or they do okay and little by little then maybe they drop off and they fall off. Whereas the time we got there, we've been wrestling for 6-7 years, so even if we had a match that was very much had cool stuff in it, we still knew how to kind of get ourselves over as characters and get people invested so they wanted to see more of us. And if something went wrong or something maybe didn't play off as well as it could, we still knew as well that the little trinkets we give them along the way would build up something bigger down the line. I do think it's harder now, these people are coming in with less experience. I do think it's a lot harder for them to come into big platforms like Progress and stay relevant and stay on top when they don't have that experience and know who they are as wrestlers.
Yeah, I do think that one perk of with the scene being so hot at the moment is, as you said, the ability to be able to push a storyline. Because back in the day, when we were doing these little shows, it was to a random crowd every night. It wasn't to like a regular crowd who was coming back every single time. And same with like the on-demand stuff. You'd have people buying DVDs, but the storylines would only be followed by maybe 5% of the crowd. As you said, you go to a progress show, pretty much all 800 people know the storyline and they're coming back for that reason. So that's definitely one of the biggest perks of the scene growing so strongly recently, because that you actually get to kind of do storylines, which is the best part of pro wrestling, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I am, in particular, we joked about the instant gratification, but the moment where you go off the top of the ladder and through that table, we joked about it, might be the most filmed moment in British wrestling history, because the next day, you went on Twitter and there must have been 80, 100, 150 clips just from every different angle in the room of people taking it. And obviously Eddie just retweeting every single one of them.
The Jordy Fleisch of our generation, you could say.
I hope so. I just wish the table had broken on.
So we had Eddie on the show not long before that, and we kind of became friendly with him. We were doing the stuff around when he did that Bret Hart tour and he was hosting that, and we were doing some stuff with them there. And I messaged him afterwards and I said, I'd like just saying, mate, that was incredible and amazing to see the kind of long-term storytelling pay off and the crowd really respond to it. And I got a five-word answer, which was, thank you, mate, fuck tables. Because it was just one of those ridiculous occasions where it just, everything you seem to do, like the crowd was so over with it. And it's to react and change what you're doing when you're getting that frustration and still pull it off.
Yeah, do you know what? Experience. I actually think, and this is me, as a performer within wrestling, You always think to yourself, okay, how to bring in a crowd which aren't wrestling fans, but equally you want to continue to entertain wrestling fans. And I always think it's a funny example with tables breaking, because if I showed that to someone who wasn't a wrestling fan, they'd just go, oh, that looked like it hurt. It didn't even break. Like, they'd almost think it was more impressive that a table didn't break. But because wrestling fans were so conditioned to tables break, you know, it's like, oh, you know, it all went wrong, when really it's like, oh, it's... I almost wish we could strip our minds and go back to a better time when we could just take, you know, if I was a kid and I saw someone like land on a table and it didn't break, I'd be like, whoa, you know what I mean? But we're all just kind of conditioned to watching what we've seen so many times before. It's a hard middle ground to get. I'm not saying that I would ever plan for a table not to break.
No.
You know what I mean? It's just I wish there was more credit to one not breaking.
I say your match as well is a real testament to how much the locker room has come along as well, because maybe when we first started, there would be people in the back who could have, like, you know, I hope he trips, or I hope on their entrance, or like we were all backstage watching, and when that final table broke, the backstage erupted. We were so pleased for you guys. We were there like, come on. So when it did break, it was like it was a true locker room moment where everyone was like, yes, they got it, you paid off. So I think it's a match of testament to you guys out there, but also like how much like the locker room and all the boys kind of like respect the art and want the scene to do well and the show to do well.
Yeah, everybody wants each other to do well in this day of age, which you're right, that wasn't common back in the day, I don't think, but these days it's a much more communal group.
And it was message. Sick.
Flash, I want to ask you a little bit about character, because different to Mark, who kind of, I guess it's a size thing, you're kind of always working from under and being the baby face, but what I love about your character is that you've managed to keep the character but flip that kind of heel face good guy villain stuff and work on both sides. What do you enjoy more?
If you say heel, I'll never
forgive you. It's a difficult one. I think that both of them definitely have their advantages and disadvantages, and being the one I will put down, one is, I feel it's easier. It's easier to walk into a room and try to get people to hate you. I do think that's a lot easier, because it's anyone can go into a room and gesture something or say something and they can get a negative reaction, especially nowadays with clickbait and stuff like that. People want to act negatively towards stuff. Walking into a room and trying to get people to like you or love you is so much more difficult. So when you get that face reaction and you're able to get people to erupt because you won or cheer you or get behind you, especially if you walk into a cold room or a cold arena where maybe they're not sold on you, and then by the end of it, they're fully behind you, there's nothing more satisfying than that. But I guess you can have a lot of fun when you're being the bad guy as well, and you're able to kind of like really ham it up. And
but equally, it's the positives of that long-term storytelling, because I mentioned that Thunder Bastard match earlier. I can remember going into that, and, you know, like all marks do, we were sat at the back fantasy booking it, going, well, I mean, they're definitely going to win because this is the story they're trying to tell. And actually, when you win that, the reaction that you get as somebody who nobody expected it to necessarily be the winner was incredible. And it just showed how, you know, over months and years of hard work, people have taken you to their heart. That's got to be pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And I feel that, like, progress as well, there's been a lot of people who have been in and out of progress. People have gone away for a couple of months and they've come back, and they've gone away for a year and they've come back. Apart from the injury, I came in 2014, I do believe, and I've been one of the mainstays there from 2014 up until Wembley. So that's nearly 4 years I've had without a real break. And even when I had that break or that injury, I left as an opening act and arrived as a main eventer from injury. So yeah, it really does, especially progress, because they can be some of the most demanding fans. They want a lot from you. So to get them appreciative and get them kind of fully behind me, especially when I went on to have that championship match with Travis Banks the month later, and they were fully behind me on the end moments. I mean, yeah,
honestly, between you and Matt Riddle, you turned Travis because honestly, we all loved him, and then you worked so well against him that he came out the back of those two matches looking like
Travis turned Travis.
All right, fair. That's fair. You guys are in quite a unique position, being more invested in the indie stuff, particularly with the stuff you guys do with Attack. So how do you think that the WWE, NXT UK and the new Performance Center and everything is affecting the indie scene? Is it having a kind of positive effect on the guys that are now coming through, now that you guys have moved on to the next opportunity?
I can say from first-hand experience, just from going back, well, so me and Wild Boar and Flash all run Dragon Pro Wrestling Academy down in Wales. And as I said, from first-hand experience, a really direct kind of comparison is completely benefiting the independent scene. What we can take from the PC in terms of how we're being trained, we can pass directly down onto the next generation. And it's funny because some people always like to assume, like, oh, it's the indies versus them. No, it's not. It's all wrestling, you know what I mean? And we all need to become better. This is the first time our country has ever had not just a platform this big to let people be aware of the wrestling scene in this country, but to also have the experience level of the WWE involved in this country, you know, because we've never had that before, where there could be someone up the top to pass down the knowledge of years and years and years and years and years of experience in terms of everything, not just how to wrestle, but the production side of things, the training side of things, the marketing side of things, everything, you know, like, and again, from my experience with just Attack Pro, or helping run Attack Pro and training at Dragon Pro, it's right now is the best time to be a trainee at Dragon Pro, or an upcoming wrestler working for Attack, or an upcoming wrestler working for Progress, or anywhere. And I can only imagine, and you know, assume highly, that up and down the country this is the case, because we've never ever had a time in well, ever really, where the WWE has been helping the UK scene this much. It really is, you know, whether it's directly or indirectly, it's being passed down to the next generation. And we might not see the full benefits until that next generation are at the top of the British indie scene, but it's definitely going to happen. So it's, I can't stress how much this is a positive thing, and how positively this is affecting the entire scene. It really is.
It's not just us as well, kind of taking that stuff and passing it on, but we're encouraged to do it. Like Robbie Brookside and even like William Regal, they've said in the past, like, oh, your role now are to pass on the knowledge, make sure that the next set of guys are ready to take those reins and keep this scene alive, and to make sure there's people to move up when we move on and stuff like that. So not only are we kind of getting those tools and then taking it upon ourselves and going, okay, we'll teach us, we're encouraged to do it as well. They want this scene to thrive. They want it to be the best in the, well, it already is the best in the world. They want it to continue to be the best in the world.
If you had something like WWUK, NXT UK around when you guys were 2-3 years in, do you think it would have affected in any way the way that your careers had played out?
It would have given me a much more solid plan, because I think when we were starting out, and well, up until very fairly recently, to be honest, up until the last few years, we've kind of been playing a guessing game. There's not been any route. You know, the reason Pete had to fly himself to Japan to train, or we all had to fly ourselves to America multiple times to go out there and try and get seen, is because there wasn't a direct route. Now there actually is, you know. Now you see a roster of people who are up and down the country still with training academies or on shows or whatever they're doing, and you can get in touch with them, you can ask them advice. It's there's actually much more of a visible ladder to climb. Before there wasn't. Before you just had to make your own path and hope you'd gone the right way. So I do actually think that this just, it just gives like an actual physical goal in mind, you know? And on top of that as well, with a lot of the guys coming to NXT UK and doing less stuff on the indies, that does give way more opportunity to the next generation to come up, which I know that scares some independent wrestling fans, but genuinely, in a few years, they'll be grateful because the next Pete Dunne will come in and the next Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster and Zach Gibson and whoever else, that the next ones will come in and they will love them just as much as they loved us, hopefully, or if not more, you know? And you know what I mean? That's hard to see now, but that will be the case because that's how wrestling works. It's always moving forward.
I always think it's like music fans who, like, they knew a band before they were big and then they're kind of torn when they actually start playing stadiums. They're like, well, I'm pleased for them. They've done well, but at the same time, like, you're not real fans. You weren't there at the beginning. Yeah. And, you know, Britwrest fans are brilliant, but also can be frustrating the way they kind of react to some of the stuff. You just think, you've got to realise it's opening up more opportunities and it's just going to mean more wrestling for you.
It's because they're so passionate though, isn't it? And that's why the scene is so good. Like, there's people here that have gone full on. Like, they go to 4 or 5 shows a week. They travel around the country. There's some people where we've done the slog from, like, up Newcastle and we've come all the way down to London and we'll see the same fans on each show, so they're also doing that slog. They're committed to it and they're passionate about it, so we can understand why they kind of get annoyed, or maybe they get scared because somebody's coming along and kind of going, this thing that you love, it's going to change, and they're like, oh no, please don't ruin it.
Yeah,
and it's like, no, it's fine, it's going to be fine, but we understand why you're worried and why you're scared. Change is a scary thing, but yeah, it's their passion and their determination and their love for it that's allowed us to kind of get to this point. So in a way, all the success we're having is their fault because they've been...
That's it. That's so true. Yeah. That's funny.
Is there... there's two final things. Whether there's a standout moment from the last year, but first of all, what was it like the first time you saw the NXT UK product and saw yourselves on the network in that WWE style where everything... Because I think we came down for a showing of it and it really stood out from moment one that it was very British but also very WWE. So what was that like for you guys seeing it for the very first time?
It was awesome. That's what we wanted this whole time. Because it's funny, when I was younger, I'd think, oh, I want to work for the WWE. And as I got older, I was like, oh, I'd love to, if there was a way I could work for the WWE in this country. And then it actually happened. And I was like, this is what it is. This is that thing I was thinking of all along. But I had people around, you know, I was watching. It was an exciting moment in that first episode of NXT UK. Like, obviously, we'd had the tournament before that, and that was equally as exciting. But seeing the first of what will be obviously ongoing, that was really exciting. I mean, as I said, I had a load of friends around, you know, we cracked open a few beers and we watched it, and I was like, this is a celebration right here, because this is actually it was awesome, you know. I can't put it into words more, really. It was just a great experience.
You know what I loved is we did, of course, record that big block of tapings, and I know that we'd watched, like, the Cambridge, and then we went to, where was it next? Birmingham. And then by the time we got to Plymouth, all the little bits, like, the advice we'd been given and the feedback, and everyone kind of, like, was getting used to, like, the cameras. And by the time we got to Plymouth, I remember going, man, these shows are great. And then Cambridge aired, and it got such a positive response. And I was like, oh, you've seen nothing yet. And I was like, we were watching back of those Cambridge shows and going, like, it was like night and day. We were like, whoa, the improvement by Plymouth was huge. And people were losing their mind over these Cambridge shows and thinking how much they loved them. And we were going, well, if you're loving this, you wait till we get to Plymouth, yeah, and you wait till we get further and further, because every time I watch a show, there's a noticeable improvement week on. And the time we got to Takeover, it was unreal, and it was the response we got online was incredible. Unfortunately, we weren't a part of that first Takeover, but just to sit in the back and watch the show was incredible, and we were so proud of the brand and everyone who was involved in that.
Is it also a little bit weird that kind of, because like I said, when we first saw it, so about a week before it aired, we were in a conference room a bit like this, and they showed it to kind of a bunch of journalists, and about 20 minutes from the end, Pete and Tony came in because they were doing a kind of chat with us, but then sat there and watched it with us while they were both on screen. And you could see with both of them, they're like a little bit weird watching it with a group of people also watching them on TV. It was all kind of a little bit awkward. Is that a bit weird? Like you say, like getting mates around and watching it and then you come on. Are you in any way just like...
It is really weird. No, it is. Yeah. Maybe that's a British trait. I don't know. Because it's like, I felt very awkward. And I always, even when I watch it with my housemate and my girlfriend, and I'm always like, oh, guys, like, don't look at this part. You know? It's
like, what's that, guys?
Yeah. I always promise I'm not getting beaten up, guys. I can now watch, I'm winning.
I always feel it's a bit like when when you have a favorite film and you go, oh, you need to watch this film, maybe it's with a girlfriend or a friend, and then like you're watching this film and then you're kind of like one eye watching them react to your favorite yeah. bits going, do you like this film? You're like,
yeah, that's so true.
Don't want to, and no spoilers from last night, but both of you had a bit more of a singles involvement after a lot of tag stuff. Is there a target for you guys over the next 6 months, year, whatever it might be within NXT UK?
I think, yeah, me and Flash have talked about this quite a lot. There has not been a Welsh champion in the WWE ever. So as much as we are be doing singles competition, but we love tagging with each other.
Oh, it's great fun.
Our eyes are on the NXT UK tag titles, because if we can get those, we'll be the first ever Welsh champions in WWE history. And that alone is put in the history books. And that especially as well just makes me kind of especially proud to be Welsh. You know what I mean? As I said, there's for the first time ever, there's been more than one Welsh person in the WWE. There's five of us now. Us two, Eddie Dennis, Wild Boar, and Tegan Knox. So it's a race. It's a race for the five of us. And me and Flash want to win that race and become the tag team champions.
Well, yeah, 100% what Mark just said. Like, I feel that we were kind of, when those tag belts come on, we came together and said, hey, maybe we should be a team. And we hadn't had lots of experience teaming together. And I think maybe even we thought it would click instantaneously because we'd known each other for so long. But it has been a work in progress. But every time we wrestle, we get a little bit better. We kind of figure out what we're doing. And I feel that the second outing against Gibson and Drake, and then the match we had against Fabian and Marcel, I think those two definitely showed that we've begun to hit our stride when it comes to tag team wrestling. And we're going to keep on hitting it. We're going to keep on getting cleaner and slicker and kind of getting those moves down. And if we get another shot for the tag belts, I'm adamant that we're going to become the first Welsh champions in WWE.
They're coming home to Wales.
They are.
Well, look, we wish you the best of luck becoming the first Welsh tag champions, even if this afternoon we desperately hope that you lose the Grand Slam qualifier, whatever they're calling it on TV.
Can we cut this? Can we cut this?
But look, guys, really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for joining us. And yeah, good luck.
Thank you.
Cheers for having us. Thank you.
Guys. Flash Morgan Webster, Mark Andrews, really, really good fun chat with those guys. Really enjoyed catching up with them. We've got loads of big interviews coming over the next couple of weeks. We've got Frankie Kazarian from SCU and now AEW. Vicky Guerrero, former general manager at WWE and, of course, wife of the late, great Eddie Guerrero. And Victoria, or Tara, or Lisa Marie Veron, depending on how you know her, also joins the show. So those are all coming up over the next week or so. And we'll have our usual review of the week of wrestling coming on Friday. Thank you so much. As always, review, rate, subscribe, listen, do all that good stuff. Thank you so much for listening. This has been the Pro Wrestling Show.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.